Well, it's good to be here with everybody. We're gonna jump in. We're going through a series right now on the book of Mark. And right now we're in Mark chapter 6. If you got your Bibles, you can go to Mark chapter 6. Jeff said last week that we're going hard copy. No PowerPoints. So download it. We're going to go hard copy today again. It's good to open the Word together. You know, as we go through Mark right now, in Mark 6, it starts off with Jesus going back to his hometown. And for me, it's today is a special day to some extent. As an adult, today is now the official longest I've ever lived at one single address. And 2 years and 5 months and one day. And so that's special. You know, as an adult, I've traveled a lot. But as I've traveled, a lot of people go, oh, what's your hometown? You know, or if you watch sports, people, you know, they'll go hometown, they'll say something, and I don't actually know the answer to that. And so I was born, maybe after I explain, you can tell me what my hometown is, but I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I lived there for a whole 6 months, and then I moved to Atlanta. And I lived on Delk Road for a whole 18 months. Then I moved to St. Louis with my family, because I'm still 2 years old. And we lived there for 12 years in a couple different houses. And then I went to high school. We moved back to Atlanta. We were over in Gwinnett for my high school years. Then I graduated high school, and I moved to Boston to go to college. Then I came back, finished college here at Kennesaw State. Got married, then I moved to Nashville and was there for almost 7 years. Then I moved to St. Louis and we were there for 18 months. And then we've been here for 2.5 years. So I don't know where I'm from. But my wife grew up here. She grew up right down the road and lived there her whole life until I moved her 2 miles away when we got married. And that was a really big move for her. But you know, he's going back to his hometown, and which is a big deal. Has anybody been here their whole life in like the metro area? A few of us, or everyone's a little ashamed of it. You're like, okay, I'm one of the few. But let's go. We're gonna go to Mark chapter 6, and we're gonna dig into here. In verse 1, Jesus left there and went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciples. When the Sabbath came and he began to teach in the synagogue, and many heard him, were amazed. Where did this man get these things? They asked. What could this wisdom have been given to him? What are these remarkable miracles he's performing? Isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son? The brother of James, Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? Aren't his sisters with us? And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor, except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his home. He couldn't do any miracles there, except lay his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their lack of faith. It's a really interesting story as Jesus goes back, and he had just done a whole bunch of miracles, and it's been incredible, and he goes and he preaches in the synagogue. And it says that everyone's amazed at his teaching. They're like, how could he get such incredible wisdom? And they saw the miracles he was doing, and they're like, how could he be doing such incredible miracles? They believed in what he was saying. They're like, this is good. This is good wisdom. They're like, what incredible miracles happening? And they were amazed. But then something happened. And they're like, wait a second. We know him. He's from this Bodunk town. He's Joseph's son. His sisters are right here. Greatness can't come from him. And it says they were mad, right? They were offended by him. You know, for some reason, even though they believed in what he was doing and what he was preaching, he did not fit the paradigm of what the Messiah was meant to be. That they said, no, a prophet or Messiah, they come from good means, or they come from a great city, or they come from a great people. And you know, there's no way that you could be that. And it offended them, what was going on. They grew angry. And it says that their lack of faith was so strong that Jesus' ability to do miracles was stopped. Said he could only do a little bit because their faith was so low. You know, I think it's interesting here that though we can see truth and we believe in the truth, that we can lack faith because it doesn't fit our worldview. It doesn't fit our paradigm. It doesn't fit, okay, this is how things are supposed to go, and so it offends us. You know, the one thing I thought about here, I think for us what happens is a little bit different in that we don't get mad at Jesus, right? But we get mad at other people for viewing things differently when it doesn't fit our paradigm. I think about, I love food. I don't eat a lot, but I love the little bit that I eat. And, you know, years ago, there was this fast food restaurant that everybody loved. And it had delicious food, and it was different, and it was, you gotta stay with me, because I know immediately you're going to be offended by what I say. It was Taco Bell. And Taco Bell made some of the best non-Mexican tacos that you could have. And the flavor just exploded, right? It was just incredible, right? And then there was this thing that came out, this rumor that came out, that they used, like, dog meat. Right, there was this rumor that, and then all these people who said Taco Bell's great went, oh, that's gross. Anyone who likes Taco Bell is the worst. You're eating dog food. And it still progresses today. I was talking with someone last night, they're like, yeah, that's true. Right, it's dog meat. Why would you go there? It's all a lie that it's not true at all, right? So this lie was created that it was made from this bad meat, which isn't true. If you go and look, it's actually one of the higher grades of meat at a fast food restaurant. But because this thing, right, because we now have this paradigm that it's bad food, now we get offended by anybody who likes that food, right? And it's a little silly, but we do that, right? Like, oh, I believe this it's bad meat, so therefore anyone who likes it, we're not friends anymore. You don't like, you're low. And I say that because that's what people tell me, because I still eat Taco Bell because it's still delicious, right? But because of this viewpoint that was created, we couldn't accept something true. And we do the same thing with Jesus. Though we won't get mad at Jesus, but we'll get mad at people who believe in a different version of Jesus that we believe in. That as we read our Bibles, there are things in the Bible that talk about Jesus that don't fit our paradigm. They don't fit the way that we view the world. That this part of Jesus, we don't like very much. And so instead of wrestling in our heart and changing our worldview, we decide to change Jesus. We decide to hyperfixate on certain parts of Jesus, and this becomes our Jesus. And anyone who thinks differently, we get offended at, and we fight with, and we get mad at. And we go, oh, well, you believe in this part of Jesus, but that's not my Jesus. And we get angry at each other. And we sit on other sides of the church, or we leave church, and we go, oh, I don't like their paradigm of Jesus, and that they preach this thing here. I wanted to be focused more on this part of Jesus. Because we would never, none of us are honest enough to ever say that certain parts of Jesus offend us. We just ignore the parts that do. And we create these hyperfixations of parts of Jesus that align best with what we believe in. You know, there's some that we become hyperfixated maybe on the Jesus who helps the poor and needy, but we don't care about the Jesus that preaches. Or we get hyperfixated on even the evangelistic Jesus, but we don't care about those that he loved and took care of. Or we believe in a Jesus that cared about social justice, or the conservative American Jesus, or the loving Jesus with no convictions, Or we want the table flipping Jesus that's going around making sure everybody repents. Maybe you have the inward spiritual development Jesus. It's just you and God, and I'm gonna pray for 2 hours, but I'm never gonna share that with anybody else. Maybe you have the leader Jesus. He leads and he's strong and he's a real man, you know. Or maybe it's the servant Jesus who comes down and lowers himself. Maybe you really like the nice teacher Jesus. I want him to give me the information, but not to push me to do anything real with it. But we all have this versions of Jesus that we really like. And we get mad at the versions of Jesus that other people like. And we go, oh, you're way too into that. And we get mad at church. And we're like, why do we talk so much about this part of Jesus? I want to talk about this part of Jesus. It's because we're hurt. We're offended by him. We're offended by Jesus and the whole of who he is. You know, it's so easy to do this, but the problem is if when we fixate on one part of who he is, we miss out on being amazed by the whole of him. You know, I love it in this passage. It says they heard his teaching and they were amazed. Mark uses the word amazed a lot. The people are amazed by Jesus. But as we go to church, the more we go to church, it's so easy for us to stop being amazed by Jesus because we've already decided of who he is. We've already decided that this is the Jesus that I'm believing in. And so all these other parts we don't listen to, and we lose our amazement to who he is. The best parts of Jesus are the parts that are not like me. The best parts of Jesus are the ones that I'm like, I don't get this at all. That's the amazing parts. Jesus would not be that amazing if he perfectly aligned with me. If all of his beliefs perfectly align with your beliefs, he wouldn't be that amazing. Because we're pretty messed up and we don't have this on straight. That's what's great about Jesus, is he's so different. I love how his personality can be offensive because it hurts us. And we don't like it and we have to wrestle through it. Jesus is amazing, but it's so easy to be offended by him. We see here that they lacked faith because they weren't willing to wrestle with that. And I think for us to have great faith, we got to wrestle through the parts of Jesus that make us uncomfortable. We got to seek after, okay, what about Jesus could make me feel uncomfortable? And if you haven't felt uncomfortable by Jesus recently, I want to challenge you to find it. To figure out what makes me, like, what is something in Jesus that really makes me feel uncomfortable? And wrestle through it. And figure it out. So he goes in and he's amazed by their lack of faith. He's amazed that they couldn't shift their paradigm. Then Jesus in verse 6, he went to the next village and to another village. And then he calls his 12 and he sends them out 2 by 2. And he gives them the opportunity to preach and to heal and to do miracles, which is incredible. And they do that and they come back and God did amazing things as we see here. And then in verse 14, Jesus' cousin is beheaded. The one who paved the way for Jesus' ministry is beheaded, and Herod is thinking that Jesus is John and there's confusion there, but he's beheaded. And so Jesus gathers his apostles, right? And they go into a solitary place. And I'm guessing he's going there to mourn and to weep because it's his cousin, it's his family member, it's someone who's doing the same thing he's doing, who's preaching the same message, who was just killed for preaching that message. And he goes into a solitary place. And the crowds don't care about the state that Jesus is in, and they go and they follow him. And a great crowd comes, and so Jesus preaches, and then the disciples are like, hey, we gotta send them home because there's not enough food. And Jesus, will you feed them? So they're like, well, we don't have that kind of money, Jesus. That's 6 months of food. And so Jesus gets 5 loaves and 2 bread. I'm going through this quickly. So you can read here in Mark 6. And he takes that, he gives thanks, and he feeds 5,000 men in a field with just a little bit of bread. Verse 45, immediately So he feeds all 5,000 people. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into a boat and go ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving the crowd, he went up to the mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on the land. He saw his disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost, and they cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately, he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." They climbed into the boat with him, and when the wind died down, and they were completely amazed, for they had not understood the loaves because their hearts. So we see here this story that we probably all have heard many times of Jesus walking on water. But what stuck out to me is this last verse here in this section where it says they were completely amazed because they didn't understand the loaves because their hearts were hardened. If you go back to chapter 4, Jesus does his incredible sermons, and then he goes and he finds a man who's controlled by hundreds of demons, and he sends them out, right? So he casts out hundreds of demons from a man, and then he goes to the next town and he finds a little girl who died, and he raises this girl from the dead. And then he goes here in chapter 6 In chapter 3, he does something, and I'm blanking right now, right? In chapter 4, yeah, there we go. Chapter 4, right, he's in a boat with his disciples, and he calms a storm, right? That he controls, he goes and casts out hundreds of demons, and then he goes and raises a little girl from the dead. And then he has this thing in his hometown, it's crazy. And then he feeds 5,000 people with a few loaves of bread. And for some reason, his disciples are terrified that he's walking on water. For some reason, after all of these things, they still don't get it. It says their hearts were still hardened. I think as I've read this many times, that I get really stuck here. And like, what do you mean? If I saw Jesus and he was like, "Stop," and the storm stopped, right? And then we saw this dude and he's like, he has a legion of demons in him, right? And Jesus cast it out, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, whoa, you know? And then he raised a girl from the dead, and then he feeds thousands of people with just a little bit of bread. I feel like I would be like, this, he can do anything he wants. I feel like I'd see him walking on water, I'm like, nah, that makes sense. There's no way I would be like, oh, it's us. I'm like, no, that's Jesus doing some crazy thing again, because it's only been like 10 minutes and he's done 50,000 miracles. And Jesus had given them the ability to do the same thing. So they were casting out demons and healing people and doing miracles. So it wasn't just that Jesus was doing, they also knew that he could give them that same power. And yet they still didn't understand. For me, it doesn't say why their hearts were hardened. But as I read through this chapter, contextually what it looks like is they had grown numb to the power of God. That they had seen these things, but then John the Baptist was killed. And they became disillusioned. That something happened, because John the Baptist is beheaded and he feeds the 5,000, but they don't understand it. They don't get it. Their hearts have now become hardened because they weren't before. They're now hardened. And so now it's like they finally get it. But they became disillusioned. I feel like if I was there and we're preaching, I'm like, oh, everything's great and it's awesome. Okay, yeah, this one town didn't get us, but like we're doing miracles. People are believing. Everything's going awesome. And then someone who's doing the very thing I'm trying to do is killed, and the king is after us. Okay, well, what does that mean for me? Wait a second, this isn't going to work. Maybe, like, if God really had power, he would have stopped this. He would have protected John. And if he didn't protect John, then why would he protect me? Why would he take care of us? Is this what it's going to be for us? Are we going to preach for a little while and then be killed for what we do? Maybe we shouldn't be doing miracles. Maybe this is a Jesus thing and I'm just going to be in the background. I don't know. It seems like they became disillusioned. That everything was great until it wasn't. And then they couldn't see the ways that God was working. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever felt like everything was great and being a disciple was wonderful and amazing and everything was perfect every time you followed Jesus and made the right decision until it wasn't? And then it just feels like the world is moving, but you're standing still. And God might be working, but not in your life anymore. Or maybe it's just, life is just hard. And it's not like it used to be. You know, I feel like there's multiple times in my life that's happened. You know, recently, about 9 months ago, AJ, one of our college students, one of my friends, he suddenly died in a car accident. And that happened, and I felt like, I felt overwhelmed and saddened and down. I'm not good with feelings. I need a wheel to tell me, but I felt a lot. And I felt overwhelmed with sadness. And then we were working with the college students, and we had our big, huge, like this big campus training program where people from all over the country come in to learn from North River on how to be great disciples and ministers of college students. And I'm here, and I'm trying to help lead this thing and doing some lessons, and I was so disillusioned. And I remember Al Amin was like, what happened today? And I was like, I don't know. Like, he was just trying to be like, how are you doing? And I was like, I don't know anything that's going on. I'm like, I just preached, and I don't even know what I said. And I called Garrett because he was recording everything, and I said, delete the recordings. I don't know what I said, but I'm sure it wasn't good. I'm sure God didn't move in that situation. And I couldn't function. And I'm sure God was doing great things, but I couldn't see it. Like, someone could have been raised from the dead, and I wouldn't have noticed it. Because I was just spiraling. It's, you know, life, I love the Bible because it's real life. And I think for all of us, at some point we get there. That at some point we get to this place where, like, I thought everything was going to be perfect and awesome and wonderful, and now it's just not. So what do I do with that? You know, maybe it's, you thought that, you know, you're young, you thought, I'd never sin again, right? And now you're in a place where you've been in sin that you've never been in before. And you're just like, I don't know what to do, and I can't get out. Maybe it's a marriage. You thought, I'm going to get married, and we're going to love each other forever, and we'll never fight, and it'll be perfect. And now you're like, all we do is fight. Or maybe you're like, we've stopped fighting. And my marriage is not what I wanted it to be. It's not what I hoped it would be. It's awful. How do I trust in God now? Maybe it's with health, and you know, at one point you're healthy, and now you're like, my health is not what I wanted it to be, and it just doesn't work, and I'm hurting all the time, or I'm sick, or whatever it is. You know, or maybe it's just life is just, you know, money. There's so many things, right? It could be money or job or finances or family, but there are so many ways that life just hits us hard. And I think here for the disciples, life had just hit them with reality of like, oh, this is what's coming. And they couldn't see the miracles of Jesus anymore. And they'd grown numb to them. But I love how Jesus didn't give up on them just because of it. That he actually was like, okay, let me do one more thing. Let me bring you back to the boat we were just a second ago. Let me bring you back to when I first called you on the boat. Let me bring you back to the boat to remind you that I'm doing great things, that I'm more powerful than your circumstances, that I'm more powerful than what's going on in your life. That Jesus wanted to wake them up. And I hope that you can believe that Jesus wants to wake us all up as well. That just when things are hard doesn't mean that he's stopped working in your life, but he's actually probably fighting to wake you back up, to remind you that he is doing incredible things. I tell a lot of our college students that the issue is never that God isn't working, it's that we're blind to seeing how he is. That God is doing amazing things. Jesus is more powerful than the winds and the waves. He's more powerful than our circumstances, than the amount of bread we have. He's more powerful than the town that we're in. He's more powerful than whatever is going on. He is greater than that. So right now, we're going to take communion, and I want to encourage us to think about, how is he more powerful than my circumstances? Maybe think about what is going on in my life. What is this circumstance that's holding me back? And how is he greater than this situation? Or maybe think about, well, what about Jesus am I purposely ignoring? And so I'm no longer amazed by him. But Jesus is the greatest man to ever live. And he is more powerful than anything we've ever done. So let's remember his incredible love, his incredible might right now. God, we are so grateful that you sent Jesus down. We're so grateful that you sent him down to walk among us, to be a fully human just as we are. We're grateful that Jesus never gave up on us, that he kept walking and helping. We're thankful that today he's not giving up on us and he's not giving up on us tomorrow. Help us to see the Jesus that we've ignored. Help us to see the ways that our situations have become greater than you. And help us to have faith, to trust in you that you are the Holy One, that you are greater than all things. Thank you for Jesus' death, his burial, and his resurrection. Thank you for his sacrifice and how it promises that we too can die, be buried, and raise again with you. We love you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.